Welcome to Meet the Candidate. And my guest for this session is Mike Conrad, who is running for Legislative District 4, State Representative. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you.
This is a good acquainted conversation, and I already asked you if you knew somebody that has the same last name. That didn't work out. So tell me about where you did grow up and go to school.
So I grew up in the Spokane Valley. I went to University High School is where I went to school. I went to North Pines and Well, I guess I went to Broadway, then I went to the North Pines, and then I went to U High, graduated there in 1988. Yeah, okay. So it's been, this is where I'm from, this is where I live.
Did you pursue some other education after that as well?
I did for a time. I grew up LDS, and so after I graduated from high school, I went on a mission. I went to Brazil for 2 years. I served there from 1989 to 1991. Learned Portuguese, so I'm fluent in Portuguese. Loved that. And then I came back, went to Ricks College in southern Idaho mm-hmm. for about a year and a half. And then my brother had started a business in Chicago, and he says, hey, why don't you come out and work for me for the summer? And I never looked back. Because once I got that bug of entrepreneurship, I said, this is for me. This is what I want.
Well, that's happened to a lot of people.
Yeah. So I just never went back. I got almost 2 years in. I've studied criminal justice. So.
Well, that's an interesting major. I wanted to go back to the time in Brazil. What did you learn from getting a chance to actually live in the culture?
You know, there's so many things. You know, the nice thing is I think it's important for especially Americans to get outside the country, which I wouldn't have done, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for going on a mission, I probably wouldn't have left. I would be a normal American. But it was awesome for me to be able to learn a foreign language. It was something that I never thought I could do ever. And I had no desire. But once I got there, it was very difficult. It took me about a year to really get it. And then about a year and a half into it, I was dreaming in Portuguese and I knew, okay, I think I got this. So it gave me a lot of confidence. So when I started my own businesses, mm-hmm. I had learned the confidence that, you know what, if I can learn a foreign language, I can pretty much do anything in my brain, because it was amazing. And to learn a new culture mm-hmm. was really cool. To see something completely different than what I grew up with was just awesome. And I love the people down there. I love the culture. It's just, it was an awesome experience.
You know, one of the things travel does is it gives you a perspective on your own culture. There's some lessons that you brought back that you've carried with you.
Absolutely. You know, I'm always about, I love our culture. I love what I'm an American. I love it. But it was so neat to immerse myself, because that's what it was. I wasn't around a bunch of Americans. Mm-hmm. I was around a bunch of Brazilians, and to make friends and understand a different culture and have that embedded in me. You know, I can take that in politics as well, and I know what I think and what I believe, but I also know that there's another culture out there that's not my side. It's not Republican. And in fact, interesting enough, my wife is a Democrat and I'm a Republican. So we both wake up looking at the opposition. So we learn a lot. I guess I internalized the whole, you know, different culture immediately when I got married. And we've been married for 22 years, so we're still clicking along.
You figured out how to be diplomatic.
We did. I was very diplomatic, yes.
Well, that's a good basis for politics, too. So.
Yeah.
So, So what was your first work experience? You mentioned that going to work for your brother, but was there some other earlier experience where you first learned to connect effort and money?
Well, obviously I did at a young age, you know, back when there were papers dropped off on your porch.
Yes.
I was a paper boy and loved that. Well, I loved it. I didn't really love getting up that early, but I loved it because I got paid and I was, you know, I was under 16, but that was really the only job you could get. Mm-hmm. But then we'd go out and collect the money, you know, we'd have to go to each person and collect mm-hmm. them, and that's kind of, I started interacting with people in the community, and that was a cool thing. And then I remember in seventh grade, my dad got a Costco membership. That's when Costco had just started, and you had to actually own a business or be a business person to mm-hmm. even get a membership. So he got a membership, and we went to Costco, and there was this big jug of licorice, red, you know, which they still do, the red vines.
Yeah.
So he bought that for me, and I took it to school, and I stuck it in my locker in seventh grade. And I started selling licorice at 10 cents a piece to all my friends. And they'd come out, you know, during in between class, they'd go, I need licorice. And I started making like 10 bucks a day selling licorice in my locker. Now, what happened was the vice principal found out about it, and she closed us down. She closed us down. She said I didn't have a business license, and I was like, I didn't know what that is, but I think if it was me today, I would have went and got a business license, stuck it on my locker.
Good for her for giving you a business reason.
Yes.
That made you think.
Yeah, it made me think. So I've done a lot of different little things to get me there, and that was my early years, you know, and then mm-hmm. I had several other jobs in high school, but really, once I went out to Chicago and started working for my brother, I immediately started my own business, and I've been an entrepreneur since I was 21.
So what business did you start?
So in the early 90s was you could go into a mall, and there was nothing but chairs and plants and stuff, and then they started putting these kiosks in the mall. They were carts at the time.
Oh yeah.
This is before they figured out they could make money in between the stores,
right.
You know. Of course, now that's all you see is kiosks in the mall. So my brother had actually started a business where he took these little keychains, and they looked like the state license plate, and he had mm-hmm. an engraver, and he had engraved someone's name on it, so we could make any name you wanted. And we also did the license plate frames that went around your thing. So he was doing that, and I saw that, and I went, I want to do this. He had six locations in Chicago, and I said, I want to do this. So I flew to Hawaii. Right, I said, you know, I'm done. This was great, but I'm going to try this myself. Flew to Hawaii. They didn't understand the kiosk concept, so I was there about a month and a half. They didn't do it. So I flew back. I bought a cargo van, and I stuck a mattress in the back of it, and I drove up to Bellingham, and I drove all the way down to Portland, and I hit every mall and applied. This is prior to cell phones, too.
Right.
So I put my mom's home phone number, and I hit every mall to see if I could get in to be able to do that concept. And one mall called me back, and it happened to be the best mall in the state, which is South Center Mall in mm-hmm. Tukwila. It's the busiest because 405 and I-5
right.
hit there. And we opened up the kiosk, and immediately I was doing like $1,000 a day in these little keychains, and that was like $1 billion to me. You know, I was 22 or whatever, so I was like, yeah, you know, really good margins on it. So that was the beginning of it, and then I just did those all over the country for many years, probably about 15 years. And then my dad started getting sick, my mom got sick, and then I decided, okay, I'm done with this. I sold it all and moved back to Spokane to help my parents because they were ill. So, and then here I worked with my dad. He did insurance, so I got my insurance license. I did some insurance for 2 or 3 years. But then after that, tried a couple other things, and then I got into, my brother had this concept where you could pre-sell meat in 40-pound boxes to families, and then you would deliver that in parking lots at mm-hmm. a specific day and a specific time. So I thought that was kind of cool. So he did it, and at the time, you know, at that time it was 2008, 2009. I was in the mortgage business. I was actually selling mortgages to retailers. And obviously that collapsed. And we were actually in dire straits. We had nothing. I ended up being on welfare. My brother was on welfare. My cousin was on welfare. And then my brother said, you know what? Let's try this idea. I did this when I was a grocery store manager or a meat manager. We could pre-sell the meat. We don't have to go buy it. That we don't need anybody to invest. And let's see how it works. Well, immediately people started sending us checks and cash and just word of mouth that they wanted to buy boneless, skinless chicken for $1.49 because it was cheap. You would sell, you could buy 40 pounds, but it's $1.49 a pound. We sold 40,000 pounds of chicken the first time, and it was just like, again, that was like $1 billion to us because we couldn't pay our light bill. We couldn't pay anything. So when we saw that, we went, this is going to work. This will work. So we built it. My brother, in 2012, he decided it was too much for him, so he got out. So then my cousin and I bought him out, and we built it until I got out in 2015. And it was a pretty good sized business. I think it was at, it had done about $45 million that year, and it was on to do $100 million. But I was no longer part of it in 2015. And unfortunately, the people that took it over didn't understand the model, didn't understand what it was, and it collapsed in 2018. Sadly, I lost a lot of money and a lot of opportunity with that. But you have choices in life. You're either going to roll over and wet on yourself, or you're going to get back up. So I decided I'm going to do it again, and I'm not going to allow people to influence me, because you kind of get that perception of sometimes people think they're smarter than you, and they are smarter than me in other verticals, but they weren't smarter than me in this vertical. This vertical was something that was created by my brother and I and my cousin, and when we brought people in that thought they were better, smarter, you know, because they have degrees or this or that. We learned quickly that they are inside the box and we are outside the box. And when you're outside the box, it's hard to relate to those people who continue to stay inside the box. So we decided we'd do it again. We started in 2008. The new company is called The Savory Butcher. We continued to do the same model, and we're growing.
2018.
In 2018, we started after the other one collapsed, because our non-competes went with it. So because non-competes were gone, even though we had lost everything, we decided, you know what, we're good at this.
Well,
let's
do it. That's what entrepreneurs have to be able to do, is to start back up again.
Well, and it's great, and we've done, and actually, a lot of people are suffering through COVID. Our business actually grew because we are socially distanced. The way our model is you just drive up and we put it in your car.
So. Be flexible. And
very flexible.
Well, so with all of that entrepreneurial stuff going on, what made you turn to politics?
So I have personal reasons, but I have, ultimately, I want to protect businesses. Small businesses have gone through a lot over the last 4 months with this COVID-19 and the state shutting you down. I'm sure there's a lot of companies, a lot of businesses that are going to be hurting even more once the state comes after them, because maybe they didn't file for some permits, or maybe they didn't pay their sales tax because they had no money, but they had this account full of money and they had to pay their bills, you know, or maybe there could be a lot of things and I believe a lot of things will come up, and there may be a COVID-20, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But my thing is I want to protect those people who create most of the jobs. 99% of most jobs are through small business. Mm-hmm. And those are the people who need to be protected. So my love is small business. I am about small business. Most of my life was small business. So I want to be there for those people to protect them against the state agencies who generally don't have a lot of empathy. You know, to me, small business should be uplifted and helped and guided. And I think that there's a lot of people inside of these agencies that have these God complexes that forget that they work for us. We don't work for them. And there's probably a lot of rules and regulations and laws that are on the books that are stupid, silly, doesn't work. You know, it doesn't work within innovation because things change. Like my model. With my model, I had to fight the Department of Health for years. They would not listen to me. They wanted to charge me $600 per location in every county. It was like $20,000 to $25,000 every year, when our neighbor Idaho would say, here's $79, it covers the whole state. So I actually changed the law in the state of Washington with the help of Matt Shea and Senator Patton a few years ago in 2014. We got a House bill together for me, because I didn't feel the Department of Health. I tried to go to the Department of Health. I tried to get them to understand my model and to help me so that I could have one fee like Idaho and I wouldn't have to do all of this, because logistically it was also difficult for me to get the trucks to those areas to have them, you know, look at them and just kind of go like this and then charge me $600, you know. So we changed the law in the state of Washington. So I have some legislation experience because it went right through.
Okay. Well, that goes to your 30-60-second wrap-up of why should people vote for Mike Conrad for Legislative District 4?
So I think a lot of reasons. I think there's been no energy in the legislature. I mean, there's been some negative energy in District 4, but for me, I think there needs to be some positive energy. I'm very excited. I want to represent the people of District 4. I want to be that person that if a constituent comes in and says, hey, I have a problem with the Department of Labor, I have a problem with this, I have a problem with that, I want to walk into their office and try to help them take care of that. I want to be available all the time. I'm excited to help these people. I want to protect the District 4 and uplift. So my motto my whole life has been, well, most of my life, ever since I started in 2008, is the health and wellness and the uplifting of people, and I'm adding to that communities. And I want to uplift the community by whatever I can do to do that. I'll do it.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in today, Mike, and I wish you good luck on your campaign season.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah.
90 million Christians are eligible to vote.
40 million didn't.
That's 45% of eligible Christians not voting.
We can change that.
We Believe We Vote was designed to arm people of faith with information on candidates
and how they line up with biblical and constitutional principles.
It's simply WeBelieveWeVote.com.
We're on a mission to rev up the 2020 election.
Tell your friends, your neighbors, and especially your pastors to rev up.
Be an educated voter.
Arm yourself with truth based on the Word of God.
2020, rev up.
Register, educate, vote.
Rev up.
Rev up.
Rev up 2020.